Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know.
Refill?
Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Tuesday edition of PFT Live. We spent a lot of the first segment talking about CeeDee Lamb's quest for a contract he has earned and fully deserves in Dallas. The challenge becomes first speaking the right language, because there's the BS crap that we all see that the high-end receivers really aren't earning. And then there's the real numbers, the real structure, the reality of the contract. And then you have to figure out a middle ground once you get on the same page. And I'd say getting on the same page is the biggest challenge. Let's start with the best receiver right now who is due a new contract, and that's Justin Jefferson of the Vikings. They tried to do it last year before the regular season started. At one point, I was fishing around about Jefferson after we had him on the show at the Super Bowl, and I was poking around with some folks I know. And at some point, somebody said to me, do you know how much he was offered last year, what he turned down? And Shefty threw out that $30 million per year number. That doesn't come from Jefferson's camp. That comes from the team. And this is an effort by the team to kind of very gently paint him as wanting too much. And the issue isn't the dollars. It's the structure. Hey, we offer him $30 million per year. Right, but if you only guarantee the first year of it, I mean, that's the problem with the Vikings. They broke from that with TJ Hawkinson to a certain extent. They did it for Kirk Cousins in the past. They need to be willing to fully guarantee a significant chunk of money to Justin Jefferson. You got to treat him like a quarterback. If you're going to keep this guy and you're going to build your team around him, as you should, and he's a guy you can trust to catch any ball that's thrown his way, and he's going to be the centerpiece of your offense, and you were competitive last year without him, how much better will you be this year with him, regardless of who the quarterback is? They need to get this done. And you know what happened, Chris? The first post I wrote, it was one of the most trafficked items we had that week. After the salary cap went up, just got more expensive. Whatever he turned down before, he's going to turn down 13.6% more now because the cap skyrocketed to $255.4 million. So they got a problem here. And I don't know how they go about resolving it.
Well, I could tell you how. I mean, sign him up. Sign him up for a long-term deal, right? I mean, I know we're supposed to do like on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are they to get it done before the season? I'm going to give it a 10.
Supposed to do a lot of things.
I'm going to give it a 10, though. I think it's going to get done. Right, they'll figure it out. With Justin Jefferson, I think there's two things. One, he's awesome. You know, two, you said it right. He catches everything. He's dependable as hell. Right. The other thing is, too, we're getting into an era here where receivers and Justin Jefferson, the way he works and how dedicated he is, they last a long time. You know, so this could be more than a 3-year deal. You could make it a 5-year deal and maybe soften the blow with how you have the averages and how you get the money spread out there. But I don't see how they don't do this, how they don't get it done before the year. They're just waiting to cause issues if they don't get it done. And he is clearly the best player on their team and definitely one of the two or three best receivers in football. So I'm going to say it's a 10 that this one gets done.
We are both card-carrying members of the Justin Jefferson fan club. I might be the unofficial president. And I say that because I'm going to try to thread another needle here. And I'm not suggesting that he was malingering in any way. Why come back last year until you're truly and completely 100% when you don't have your long-term security? I support that 1,000%. If you're waiting for the second contract you've earned and you have an injury that keeps you anything below 100%, you do not play until you're 100%, because I would have done it if I had my security. But the injury risk is on me. I'm in year four of my contract. I don't have my long-term deal. He suffered that hamstring strain against the Chiefs in week five. He was gone for a long time. And
he still had 1,000 yards and averaged 15 yards a catch. And I mean, it's incredible.
And I have no problem with him staying away until he was truly and completely
100%. Yep, I know you did. Right.
I think he would have been back sooner if he would have had his deal, because he would have risked aggravating the hamstring in order to come back and earn the money. So, you know what, Vikings, you just got, and you can't regret. I talked about earlier how I don't like to live in regret. Ziggy and Mark Wolf, do not live in regret on this. Yeah, you could have got him cheaper last year. Oh, well, you didn't. The price went up. You know that house you wanted to buy last year and you screwed around? The price of that house went up. So if you want it now, you got to pay for it. And you can't worry about what it would have cost you last year. You got last year at the low number in year four of his contract. This year, the price goes up. And you just got to accept it. And you know, they let Kirk Cousins walk away. I think they kind of won. In hindsight, I really do think they were kind of like, oh, what a shame. Don't go. Close the door. Don't go. Move the furniture in front of it. Don't go. Please don't go. Come back anytime. We don't really mean that. But if they're going to go rookie quarterback and get the fans to hope that it's going to work, well, one way to help that rookie quarterback thrive, whoever they trade up to get.
That's right.
Or maybe stay put. I saw a suggestion in one of the newspapers. Maybe they stay put and Michael Penix falls to them at 11.
Definitely.
I doubt that's going to happen.
It could.
But
yeah.
whoever they get, that guy's going to be better with Justin Jefferson out there. So, you know, they're going to give up draft capital to get their quarterback. They got to give up cash to keep their receiver. Let's break that mold of Randy Moss, traded. Percy Harvin, traded. Stephon Diggs, traded. Let's pair Jefferson with this young quarterback, slap them together, and see what you can do for the next 4 or 5 years. So I agree with you. I'd say it's 9.5 because I'm accounting for, and again, I say this respectfully, I'm accounting for the possibility that they're going to do something stupid.
Yeah.
So that's where the 0.5 comes from.
I say this respectfully as I shit on you and three other people today.
I'm just saying there's a chance they might decide to look at the eclipse.
Yeah.
And you have to always factor in the chance that somebody that you think is reasonably smart is going to be dumb enough to look at the eclipse.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to be dumb enough to look at the eclipse.
Yeah, maybe they are. You're right. But okay. So we're in agreement there. I think so. I mean, we know how we both agree
it's
necessity.
10.
Yep. Necessity for Minnesota to get that done for a lot of reasons.
All right, Brandon Ayuk, scale of 1 to 10. Since I failed with the setup earlier, as you somewhat tactfully pointed out, scale of 1 to 10, Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers getting a deal done before the start of the season.
This one's interesting here. I don't know where this is going to go, really. I mean, again, the 49ers, it's Kittle, it's Debo Samuel, right? It's McCaffrey, it's Trent Williams. These are all guys on the offensive side of the ball that are making top-of-the-market money. Can they pay another receiver that? That's where I look at it. Again, it kind of goes back into the balancing act. We talked about CeeDee Lamb. Hey, it's a first-rounder. He's done very good, right? Is it superstar good this whole time? No. This was clearly his best year of his career. Do I think he's in the class of those guys that we continue to mention? No, I do not think he's there, right? So what is that number he's asking for? How do the 49ers value him? They got Debo. They got Kittle. They got other guys too. So this is one where I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to go 50-50 here. I don't know where this goes right now. So I'm only going to go 5 here, Mike.
I'm going to go 7.5. Here's why.
Okay.
I think this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And if the 49ers, since we're insulting front offices throughout the NFL this morning, the 49ers, let's assume they're smart enough to realize how they've done things in the past and learn from how they've done things in the past. Because I think that Brandon Ayuk will hold out, just like Nick Bosa did last year, and push it to the limit, and eventually they'll cave and they'll give him the contract after he proves his point by holding out. And then what happens? He's missed everything, and he's not going to be as good this year.
Yeah.
Just like what Nick Bosa wasn't as good.
Debo Samuel wasn't as good. Right.
So learn from that, Jed York. Learn from that. Quit being stubborn. Quit being cheap. Pay the guy now because you're going to pay him later. At some point, the coach that you've entrusted your team to is going to prevail upon you to pay the guy after he holds out and he's not ready to go.
So
learn from it and get it done now because you're going to get it done later.
What's the sweet spot? Like, first off, like, you know, the scenario I brought up before, right, where I was, if I was the 49ers or the Cowboys and we were trying to figure this out, I'd go ahead. Find a trade. Tell me a team that's going to trade you what we want, but they're also going to pay you what you want too, right? Are you that? I would call both of their bluffs if I'm both of those teams. I would. I'd go ahead, see what it's out there. If you can get a first rounder and get a big contract like A.J. Brown did, then so be it, and we'll see you later, or maybe we'll match it or give you a little bit better, and we'll move on. But that's, to me, where this is going to be interesting. And, like, so I ask you, what's the sweet spot for Ayuk, Mike? Like, in your eyes, right? When we're talking about, okay, let's just say the top of the market receivers really realistically making like $25 million a year, right? When we take away the bull crap from Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill and all that. Cooper Kupp's making $26.7 million. His deal was pretty real, right? Because it was only a three-year deal, I think, if I remember correctly.
Right, it was an extension of the – there's still a little BS.
A little BS to it, right. But what do you think? What's that sweet spot?
Let's say the magic number right now. Yeah. Let's say the magic number right now is just – let's say it's 26.
Okay.
Just to have a number. Yeah. Let's say the real value is 26.
Right.
Well, the problem is the receiver position is becoming like the running back position in that you can find guys anywhere. You can find guys in the draft who can come in and do well. There's no guarantee that guy you draft is going to do well, but the success rate is higher than it's been because so many guys are NFL ready. There's a handful that are above and beyond whatever the others can do, but this guy was a second team All-Pro. He had his career year, and you traded up in round one to get him. And if you hadn't, he'd be a member of the Green Bay Packers right now, and Jordan Love wouldn't be. That's a fact. They wanted Justin Jefferson. He was gone. They wanted Brandon Ayuk. The 49ers jumped the Packers to get him, and that's when they moved up to get Jordan Love. So they've used a first-round pick. This gets back to my whole lottery ticket analogy. You've got a winning lottery ticket. You got to pay the guy. Debo Samuel's average is 23.8, and we know, again, that's a little fugazi. I think that something in the neighborhood right now, given the current market and the salary cap, something in the neighborhood of that 23 or 24 would be fair and doable when you consider the cap's going to keep going up. And I think that after this year, Debo's probably on the endangered species list. George Kittle is as well.
Yeah.
As right. I said earlier in the offseason, I really think they want to hold this all together for one more year, with Kittle and Ayuk and Debo and Brock Purdy not being able to get a second contract, and just kind of load it up one more year and go for it and then figure it out next year. They don't want to have to get rid of one of those guys this year. But there's no way Ayuk is going to play for that reduced number. He'll hold out, I predict, and they'll eventually pay him anyway. Just do it now. But I think something in the range of 23 to 24. And you can do it. You can take that $14 million that he's due to make this year, and you can do the extension, and you can cook something up that looks like 24, right, but is really 20 or 21.
Yep.
You can do that and say, hey, he's getting $24 million a year. That's a pretty good deal. You know, he's not Justin Jefferson. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not Devontae Adams, but he's close enough, and this is what we're going to pay him. Oh, and he's better than the guy we gave 23.8 to.
Yeah, I listen.
Right now,
I definitely think that's a possibility. I hear what you're saying there all the way. I do. I'm gonna be interested. You know, like you said, I do think it's coming to that point where, yeah, some of these guys might be coming to the end of the shelf life. The 49ers, this Super Bowl team, you know, right? They got to start thinking like, hey, we're gonna have to start changing out these pieces here at some point. I think you named the right guys on the endangered species list. This Ayuk thing is going to be interesting. I would think, right? And again, I have no inside knowledge, but I just off the top of my head, 23 or 24, I would feel like is a little expensive for Brandon Ayuk. That's how I would feel. I'm not saying I'm right. I guess what I'm saying is I feel like the 49ers would feel that way too, but we'll see. But that's certainly something to watch for here as we go through the offseason.
Something I need to do,
yeah,
and I'm reluctant to write this check and make this commitment, but what I need to do is get those top 5-7 receivers and have
really break it
two
down.
Columns.
Yeah.
Two columns.
Yeah.
And I think I've already done that as the deals came out. So it may not take as much effort as I'm, you know,
yeah, you usually
I'm
break
have
them
to
down
expend.
Like that in your articles, right?
But I may take the overthecap.com number graphic that we've been showing and then have the other column which shows what it's really worth, and that may be instructive to trying to figure this out. But look, here's the bottom line. As I said earlier, the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. If Brandon Ayuk waits, if the 49ers wait, more accurately, and you get these other deals done, the price is going to go up. And that leads us to the next one, the Bengals and Ja'Marr Chase, who is deliberately waiting to see what Justin Jefferson does so he can jump him. So it's going to be more expensive for the Bengals the longer they wait because he's waiting for Justin Jefferson. What's your likelihood, 1 to 10, that Chase gets his deal before the season starts? He's only entering year 4, not 5. So it's harder to think about him holding out, but who knows?
I don't want to say definite. Like, I gave Justin Jefferson a 10. I don't think this is far off. I'm going to go 9.5 here with Ja'Marr Chase. He's just too special. And I think, like, to your point, and they've shown us a little history here of even what they did with Joe Burrow, I don't think they're going to wait and let this get out of hand, right? I'd be scared to death, right? Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow missed a year. The Bengals, right, are going to be a motivated football team. They know they're good, and they didn't get to, you know, show their best stuff last year because of injuries and stuff like that. I'd be worried that this is a watch out for the Bengals year. Ja'Marr Chase gets 1,900 yards, and now you got to pay him way more than every other receiver in football. So I feel like his deal, Justin Jefferson, they're almost going to be in cahoots there. They're just waiting for each other, and they want to one-up each other and just say they're the title holder. But I still think this is inevitable, and we'll get done here before the season. So I'm 9.5, Mike.
By the way, cahoots, yeah, a word that is not nearly used as much as it should be. Well done.
Hey, thank you.
You really do have some good words today.
Hey,
I like it.
I'm hot.
I'm impressed.
Baby. Woo! Yeah.
All right.
Hot.
I'll agree with you on Chase. This has to get done. It will get done. He is the kind of player you don't screw around with. This is a foundational guy. They didn't screw around with Joe Burrow. They're not going to screw around with Ja'Marr Chase. They have realized if you have nice things, you have to, you know, you have to buy insurance, you have to pay, you have
That's
to have
right.
a nice house.
That's right.
If you have a nice house, you got to have nice furniture. If you have nice furniture, you need to build a nice house. They got some great pieces to this team. They got to do things accordingly to make sure they stick around. Also on the Bengals, T. Higgins, franchise tagged at $21.8 million for this year. Likelihood of the Bengals doing a long-term deal with him, scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to give that a 0.5, right? I mean, I gave Ja'Marr Chase the 9.5. The 0.5 I have of it not happening this year would be that 0.5 then going to T. Higgins, which I don't think is very likely, and him getting a huge piece of the pie. No, I think this is a almost like you said with the 49ers type of thing. Let's one more year. Let's see if we can buy a little time, maybe figure out a way. But if not, then maybe we'll have to move on. But let's just try to keep the band together here one more year and buy ourselves some time. But I don't think like long-term contracts happening before the season. I don't see that happening.
The Bengals have a long history of using the franchise tag, keeping the guy for a year, and then he's just gone.
Yeah.
They did that with the safety, Jesse Bates.
Yes, right.
Didn't they tag him for one year, and then
right.
he's just gone.
Right.
There may be one guy that they signed to a long-term deal after they tagged him, but their history has been tag one time, gone. And Higgins wants a trade or has requested a trade. No
yeah.
one has called the Bengals about trying to trade for T. Higgins. There's Bills fans out there that are hoping the Bills, but they're not gonna do that to backfill Stephon Diggs. It's gonna be a cap disaster. And I think there's some curiosity to see if T. Higgins can replicate what he does without Ja'Marr Chase. But you know what? We saw him in that Vikings game on a Saturday. Looking pretty damn good when Ja'Marr Chase was injured. So if you're banking on T. Higgins not being a number one receiver, I think you're at the wrong bank. All right, Lions and Amon-Ra St. Brown. He also is eligible for an extension. He was a low-round pick, obsessed with proving everyone wrong, and he has. What do you think the chances are of him getting a long-term deal. There was a report in early March.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
Were close on a deal that would pay him $26 to $28 million per year. Of course, that's surely, you know, extension when you take the Fugazi last year of a whatever round, sixth round. Was he a sixth round or fourth round or low round pick? And yeah, it's so it's 26, 28. Real's going to be 23, 24 probably. Scale of 1 to 10, do they get it done?
Yeah, I do. I think this is really likely. Like, I'm going to – it's not a 10 or a 9-5, but I'm going to give it a 9. You know, one, I think he embodies what they want up there. You know, he's a killer. He's tough. He's gritty, right? He works hard. He's chippy. He wants to bite kneecaps off. He fits the Detroit Lions. That's what he is. He can do everything. They're an offense with Ben Johnson that understands how to use route runners. He's a special route runner, right? And I think, too, Mike, you know, the fact that, hey, he knows he's damn good. I think he's a pretty realistic person to know, like, wait, I'm not Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or that guy. And the fact that he's a low-round pick, like you were explaining a second ago, I think that'll make him even more like, okay, I'm not going to worry about every last penny here. Yeah, I wanted $26 million a year. Okay, I'll settle for $25.5. That's good. Deal, guys. Let's move on. And I feel like that'll happen there in Detroit.
He's due to make $3.36 million this year because of the procedure that escalates the value of that final year for a mid-round pick who has come in and done very well. So 3.36, he'll get a lot more than that if they get this deal done. And look, this gets back to one of the basic strategies I think every NFL team needs to employ. When you have a guy who comes in, defies the odds, busts his ass, does everything we've asked, and thrives, you've got to reward him because everybody else sees it. And it becomes the example. And this is true in any workplace. Hey, look, this is the guy who's getting it done. And he's doing all the things we want. And he's, you know, he's showing up late. He's showing up early and he's staying late. He's not showing up late and leaving early. He's showing up early and staying late. He's busted his ass. He's done this, he's done that, he's done that. And if you do the same things that he's doing, you will get your reward too.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I think that made it so hard for Daniel Snyder to understand how to run a team. He would throw money at guys from other teams, and he would be less inclined to take care of his own guys, like a Kirk Cousins,
right,
who was there and checked all the boxes and did everything he was supposed to do, earned the starting job, and they didn't want to pay him. They want to pay somebody else instead. So I think the Lions are smart enough as they mature into a team that has gone from being the hunter to the hunted. This is a guy who's helped you get to this point. You have to reward him. So I agree with you. I think they'll get it done. They need to get it done, and they need to build around Amon-Ra St. Brown moving forward. All right, let's take a break. When we return, new Patriots coach Gerard Mayo keeps it real when it comes to the rebuild the team is currently engaged in. That's next here on PFT Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
That is an unusual photograph. Bill Belichick, supporting the Washington Huskies, where his son Steve is the defensive coordinator, hanging out. Hey, look, you know, you get a little free consultation, a little advice, a little, you know, supplemental film study, game plan review, whatever the case may be. You got Bill Belichick. He's not doing anything this year. Why not help his son out a little bit? So there he is at spring practice with the sleeves on the hoodie. I think that's the weirdest part. The hat doesn't quite fit.
It's a real hat. He's kind of a visor guy, right? Usually you see him in a visor. So it's a little, I feel like I don't see him in a traditional hat all the time. But I guess he probably just got the sweatshirt. So he hadn't had the chance to get the scissors out and cut off the sleeves yet and do all of that and customize it like we know Belichick can.
It is strange to see him in anything but Patriots colors, regardless of whether or not the sleeves are on or off. All right, so obviously, if you haven't been, you know, completely off the grid for the past few months, you know that he's gone from New England and Gerard Mayo is in. There's hope that the Patriots can turn around as quickly as the Texans did, and the Texans were basically left for dead a year ago, and it is amazing what they've accomplished. Here's Mayo on the Patriots possibly being able to do what the Texans have accomplished. Remember, Nick Caserio had been building that team for 2 years before they got C.J. Stroud in that position. So when you look at our team, I'm not asking for patience, but I kind of am. It's a process. It's not only about the quarterback. Obviously, you want to have that QB1 and build around him, but it doesn't always happen when you want it. Look, we could bring a quarterback in here, and he may not be ready to play realistically. That's why we have a guy like Jacoby Brissett coming along. Jacoby is great. He can still play football and also mentor someone in that room. So, you know, Mayo in the past has suggested that quarterback is where they're going to go with the third overall pick. They're leaving the door open, though, to trade out.
They definitely have been lately.
Quarterback this
right,
year.
Right.
Yeah. And because are we ready as a program to add a rookie quarterback and throw the expectations on him and start this process of him playing with a team around him that isn't maybe good enough, and he's not going to be good enough, and he's going to end up in, you know, the quarterback graveyard of the 2021 draft? Look at all those guys, all the other drafts we're looking at. What made a guy not reach his potential? One of the problems is playing not just before you're ready, but before you have a team around you that's ready to do enough to let you thrive.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, that's a big part of this, right? Is it, you know, the chicken or the egg, the cart or the horse? I don't know. I mean, more times than not, I would go, you need the damn team first. That's the most important thing. There's like, you know, 10 quarterbacks in the history of the game that didn't need the, you know, a real good team, and they could still look real good like we talk about all the time. So, you know, that's where I would err on that, building the team, right? But, hey, if it fell right, and somebody was stupid, like Washington, and they took somebody else at 2 and Jaden Daniels there, well, okay, then I'm okay, he's here, damn quarterback time. But at the same time, like we've talked about, wait, after Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, if I have a group of guys that are very closely together and someone now is willing to give up the farm to move up to number 3 because they're panicked they might not get one and they want J.J. McCarthy, right? Okay, well, then I think I would, you know, be thinking about trading down, and maybe you get one of those other guys, you know, with a later pick, and plus you got other picks to go along with it. But they're in a sweet spot here, and I feel like the more and more I hear to them the last few weeks, the more and more I feel like they don't really want to take the quarterback at 3, and they want to build the football team, right? Just reading between the tea leaves like we always do.
Well, and if anyone out there understands that you don't have to use a top 3 pick on a quarterback and have a successful team, it's the Patriots, who stumbled into Tom Brady at pick number 199, if you haven't heard, and ended up becoming one of the all-time greats. That doesn't mean they wait until round 6 to draft a quarterback, but it's all value, and it's all what more can we get for this pick. And if somebody values this spot more than we do and we can get more lottery tickets, I'm always a fan of getting more lottery tickets, having more chances to get great players. That's why there's this thought now in Minnesota, maybe they stay put at 11 and get a quarterback there if they get lucky, and they still have the 23rd pick, and they keep next year's first-round pick that becomes a guy who can become part of the nucleus of the team moving forward. Maybe that's the play. That's the flip side to trading up, and the team that trade down gets all that stuff. So I can understand that's why the Patriots are thinking about doing that. I mean, and also from Mayo's standpoint, you don't want to write a check that you can't honor. You don't want to look like a failure. You want time. You want people to be patient. Yeah, let's be patient. Let's not expect that we're going to be 10-7 this year. Let's expect and plan for another lean season as we try to build this thing. And it's right for him to point to Nick Caserio. Even though D'Amico Ryans showed up last year and C.J. Stroud showed up last year, Caserio had been there building inside out.
Right.
That's the key. You build from the inside out, and then you add the finishing touches that are the sexier pieces that everybody gets jazzed about and like, oh, this is the guy that's going to turn it around for us. You got to have the infrastructure in place before a C.J. Stroud can turn it around. So that's what the Patriots need to do. And I agree with what Mayo was saying. And it's also smart to not show your cards so that whatever does happen, you can say with a straight face, that's exactly what we wanted to happen. That really is a big part of this that I think gets overlooked by us. They're all playing this game of, we want to be able to say we got exactly what we wanted. And if we trade down, we'd like to be able to say we got who we would have taken. If we only trade a few spots, hey, that's the guy we would have taken at number three. Nobody knows because we didn't tell anybody. So that's part of the salesmanship of this as well.
Yeah, no, I agreed there. Agreed. And, hey, listen, at the baseline, you know, my thought at pick number three, right, and I know, listen, we've had this conversation and I've made, you know, again, if you're sold on a guy and there's a big separation, but for my assessment here, there's no quarterback worthy of the number three pick in this draft. Other than the guys that I think are going to go 1 and 2 and Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, right? That would just be a baseline thought. Again, now, I know and I've said it. We've seen worse quarterbacks picked at number three. I said it yesterday. I got that. And if you're sold, he's the guy. I'm never going to be mad at you for just being, hey, this is the guy who gives a damn if we took him 10 picks before the whole draft crowd and all the draft experts think we should have, right? Ask the Detroit Lions, Jahmyr Gibbs, right? All the plays he made last year. Who gives a damn about the extra 10 picks that, oh, he wasn't supposed to go into there. He was awesome for them. He made big plays all year long. So I hear that, but I think from our general thought, our general terms of what we think of as a quarterback, yes, I look at it and still go, Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams are the only guys I look at to be our traditional top three, top four, top five picks at the quarterback position.
Well, and the problem is the Vikings have painted themselves into a corner.
Yes, they
have. The Broncos are desperate.
The Raiders
are desperate.
Right? Yeah.
There are teams out there that are going to not just overdraft, they're going to trade up. They're going to give up a lot. As Rick Spielman said, the former Vikings GM, the Vikings are probably going to overpay, and he thinks they're going to overpay for J.J. McCarthy. And we'll see how that plays out. Let's take a break. When we return, defensive tackle draft rankings time from Chris Sims. We'll do that next on this Tuesday edition of Pro Football Talk Live. You spelled a word right. Well, this is a monumental day. Do we have confetti?
R-E-V-E-N-G-E.
Conspiracy. C-O-N-S-B-I-R-A-C-Y. Conspiracy.
I'm a good speller. All right, that's what I'm good at.
That was Chris last week. He's using some words today that he probably couldn't spell. I think you would have an issue with kerfuffle. Or would you?
K-E-R-F-U-F-F-L-E. I feel like I could do it, but that seems right, yeah. But I'm not sure.
That's right. You got it. Ding, ding, ding. You put the F-U in kerfuffle.
That's right.
I like it.
Yep.
Hey, revenge reminded me of the women's national championship. That was another revenge game, but they really didn't play that up, did they? I mean, South Carolina lost to Iowa last year in the semifinals, but we didn't hear about anybody pooping in anyone's dishwasher going into that one. It wasn't a revenge game. Why wasn't that a revenge game?
Well,
why was LSU-Iowa a revenge game, and why wasn't Iowa-South Carolina a revenge game?
I guess, yeah, you're right. I don't know why. It should have been, I guess, technically. I'm sure South Carolina felt like it was revenge, but I think it also like plays into it kind of like what we talked. South Carolina has been so elite in women's college basketball the last few years and winning two out of the last three and losing in the final four, like you said, where I guess it just doesn't feel like, you know, they're so damn good. There's no such thing as revenge. They're the best.
Yeah, that's true. And they were wire to wire undefeated and awesome all year long. All right. Defensive tackles entering the draft. It is only 16 days away. Who is your guy?
Oh, my guy is our guy. Our guy from the combine, Byron Murphy II from Texas. right? I got him and Darius Robinson in a class of their own as far as defensive tackles from the NFL draft. Byron Murphy's a guy that I look at 15 to 25 in the draft, Mike. Remember when he told us he came out of the womb swole, right? He's been swole his whole life. I mean, it's true. You watch him, it's an elite explosive athlete, incredible strength for his size, incredible agility and ability to change directions, right? He can bend, and he's very, like, as you can see in this video, he's an athletic person. This is not just some stiff meathead. Right, he's in weird positions, on his knee, gets off the block, makes the tackle, extremely strong for 297. Like, out of this world. In fact, he played nose tackle more than the guy that was 366 pounds and the NFL views as a nose tackle. That's how good he is. He's got a little of that, you know, Aaron Donald-ish, Kalijah Kansi, right, who got drafted in the first round, Sheldon Rankins, that type of football player where I would say maybe he's not as athletic as Aaron Donald, but he's stronger than Aaron Donald, right? That's how I would look at a damn good football player. He's going to help somebody's defense next year.
Big guys that can move quickly and blast their way through offensive lines and create havoc, that's what teams are looking for. And, you know, you mentioned his teammate, and his teammate's been in the news for other reasons, T'Vondre Sweat. He was the conference defensive player of the year. You were talking about that during a break yesterday. Like, how did that happen?
How does that happen, right? I made a joke on my pod when I was talking about it. It was like, they might need to rescind the votes of people who vote for stuff like that. Like, how did we just go, oh, he's big, we're just going to make him the defensive player of the year? You can't watch a Texas game and go, wait, the best player on the field is Byron Murphy. I'm shocked by it. I mean, in every game, Michael Penix, right? He told us, it doesn't matter what game you turn on, there is one guy that stands out, and that's number 90 at Texas, Byron Murphy, the second. Awesome football player, right? I think he's really, he's a top 12 talent, but because he's 6 foot, right, and a little bit different of the mold as far as D tackles are concerned, I think that's why he's probably on the board still at 15, 18, somewhere around there, Mike.
Yeah, and, you know, I think with Sweat, it's as simple as he's engaging and gregarious and entertaining.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And that can help you.
Right.
That can help you.
Right.
That can cause the people who aren't going to watch the film and understand the nuances, that can help them say, I like this guy. I'm going to vote for him. You know, he had a good interview, had a funny line, whatever the case may be. Okay, number two, you mentioned Darius Robinson.
Yeah.
Why do you have him where he is?
I mean, because he's like a DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead, long arms, right? He's different than Byron Murphy, who's this stout ball of muscle. Darius Robinson's more of this tall, long, square shoulders, strong as hell, right? He's our ultimate F the play up type of guy, Mike. I mean, guys block him and he just throws them around like they're a rag doll. I mean, he's a specimen, as you see. He's built like a Greek god here. This is 6'5", 285, 34.5-inch arms, right? Kind of has movement skills and that of a defensive end in a lot of ways. He's not quite explosive enough off the edge and have the bend to be that. He's going to be a top-notch defensive tackle and a guy that, hey, in certain situations, you can play him on the edge, but his ability to hold blockers up and disengage and get off of them or just rip them or squeeze through a gap and get in the backfield, he's one of the safest picks in the draft, right? I think I look at him again, top 25 pick is how I look at him. I wouldn't be shocked if he goes right after Byron Murphy at some point there.
So give me your ceiling and floor for these top two guys that you put on your number one tier.
That's where I feel like Byron Murphy's ceiling is incredibly high. Right, like all pro, defensive tackle, disruptor, can do it all, right? The floor, I think, with both of these guys is pretty high to where I'd go, the floor is just like, okay, they start for you for a number of years and they're a good player, but they're not a superstar, right? That's how I kind of look at it. But I also, with both of them, go, no, these are two guys that have kind of the talent, the physique, right? The movement skills and all that to where the ceiling is all pro-ish, multiple, all, you know, Pro Bowl type of talent is how I kind of look at both of them.
Okay, let's get through your second tier. Who do you have there and why?
Right, and these guys are really good, right? They got a little aspects of their game that maybe you like a little tweaking or fixing or whatever. But the third one, Dwayne Carter from Duke, disruptive, more along the lines of like a Byron Murphy, right? He's a little bit taller of a human being. He's not your guy that you're going to go, oh, I want you to hold double teams and just hold your ground and make a mosh pit is the running game. No, he's a little bit more of that, hey, he's going to shoot a gap. He's going to get skinny. He's going to win with speed and quickness. He's incredible pass rusher on the inside. I mean, good enough to where you go, I can put him on the outside and he'll be a pain in the butt in certain situations against good offensive tackles in the NFL. But he was one that I was kind of blown away by. Kind of got a, because I was, he was more than what I was expecting. You know, another guy, loose, right, pliable, can be in weird positions and still win the battle, get off the block, make a tackle, explosive off the ball. I kind of looked at him as like a Justin Madubuike type of guy, Mike, Kobe Turner, who we saw from the Rams, right, where, hey, there's some work to do maybe a little bit in the run defense and all that, but in the pass game, there's real value right away, and then he can work on his anchor and stuff like that, but he is a mismatch against interior offensive line. He's really good. The fourth guy there I got is Jerzon Newton, Johnny Newton, they call him, Illinois. Really awesome, more of a power-based player. Right, he is your guy that, you know, can hold a guy up and just stand up a Lane Johnson and be like, nope, we're just going to wrestle here and I'm going to hold my ground and you're not going to push me around. Right. And for a guy that's a little more upright and stiff, he's got incredible athletic ability and these big, long, powerful strides to where he gets around the edge of guards and things as a pass rusher. Damn good football player. Didn't think he did. Dealt with double teams as well as the top two guys. And like I said, I think he's a little more stiff and not as instinctive as some of the top two guys in the draft. But you can see right there, he is a specimen of a human being and a damn good player.
What's your target? Where do you think those two go?
I think I'm a little higher on Carter maybe than most of the draft public, right? But I look at those guys to be 25 to 35, somewhere in that range, Mike, anywhere. Early second, late first, depending on how the board kind of shakes out. I think that's kind of how I would see it working there, Mike.
And, you know, we talked about Tavondre Sweat earlier. You don't even have him on.
No,
Your top five.
Yeah, he was honorable mention.
Okay, and that, how far down would he be in comparison to the five who made it?
He's a little, like, you know, he's big. He can hold his ground, definitely. There's a few too many plays, Mike, of going, damn, you're too good to be that content being blocked by this guy, right? Like, this guy's not in your class. Why are you letting him, like, kind of control you here? So there's a little bit of him of, ooh, I see some talent. Will the NFL game ignite a little fire underneath him and realize what he needs to be? Or is he going to melt away? And because between the DWI, not weighing in at the Senior Bowl, which is going to scare people, right? That he was, ooh, did he lose control of himself? Was he too overweight? That's going to hurt him. But this is a good class overall, right? I didn't even talk about Chris Jenkins from Michigan, who's a damn good football player that I think is a second-round pick but doesn't make the top five. You know, it's a group here that I think is pretty deep as far as the draft's concerned, Mike.
We've been spoiled by some great defensive tackles in recent years, led by Aaron Donald. But, you know, one of the big concerns when it comes to paying a defensive tackle, is he going to still have that fire? Because it takes a high degree of determination. You have to have that will. You have to be willing to be in the middle of those close-range car crashes all the time, especially
right.
If you're good, because you get doubled and tripled. And you have to have that will. And I think one of the concerns is if you give the guy life-changing money – he just loses a little percentage of that will, just a little bit.
Hey, I saw
and
it.
That could change everything.
I saw Albert Haynesworth. That was what they were scared of with him in Tennessee. And that's what kind of happened when he went to Washington, right? But we haven't seen it as much here in, you know, recent history. And, Mike, when we really look at it, the good teams in football right now, you know what they got? They got a badass mofo in the middle. They all do. All of them. You just go through it, right? And you talk about Chris Jones and, you know, we talk about Madubuike from the Ravens, right? You talk about, hey, I mean, Dexter Lawrence, you see what he does with the Giants. He's one of the best D tackles in football. Quinnen Williams there with the New York Jets, right? He's up there. Jeffrey Simmons is awesome, right? We're in an era right now where, hey, Derrick Brown of the Carolina Panthers, we drafted him. Ooh, he's a freak of nature. You know, we talk about it all year. There is more good defensive linemen to go around than there are offensive linemen. And these defensive tackles are very, very special right now. And they have way more of an effect on the game than I think people gave them credit for 5 and 6 years ago. Guys like Christian Wilkins can rush the passer inside and really affect the game that way. And we're seeing that from this whole group of guys. Javon Hargrave, DeForest Buckner. There's a lot of them out there right now, and the NFL values them in a very big-time way.
The game boils down to, quite simply, throwing the ball effectively and disrupting the ability of the opposing quarterback to throw the ball effectively, and the defensive tackles, as you say, an underrated aspect of that effort to screw up the efforts of the quarterback to get the ball out of his hands to an open receiver. All right, you mentioned Aaron Donald. When we return, he recently spoke to Chris Long on the Greenlight podcast, part of a, I guess, mini retirement tour for Aaron Donald. He revealed the team and the player he hated playing against the most. We'll tell you about that next here on PFT Live.
I guess I'm wondering, like, was there one team that always had a good plan?
Philly. I hated playing against Philly. Kelsey, his little fast always ran full. He would snap the ball and run over right now. And just, I'm like, bro, you got some good guards. Let them work. You don't got to help them every time. I'm not letting you. We're not going to let you ruin the game. And I'm like, God, every single play, every time I played the Eagles, bro, I really never really got no one-on-ones. I probably had, like, one or two during the game, and that would be it. If you don't win any one-on-one that time, you're done. You're going to get doubled and triple teamed for the rest of the game.
Aaron Donald talking to Chris Long about the toughest team he faced, the toughest player he faced, Jason Kelce.
I'm not shocked.
What a surprise. What a surprise that he would be a complete and total pain in the ass of Aaron Donald, willed himself to become an NFL player by a desire to do whatever needs to be done and go full speed all the time. And we've seen his athleticism. We saw him go over the top rope at WrestleMania. We saw him jump back up into the luxury suite.
Yeah, that was amazing.
At the Buffalo Stadium.
Right.
I mean, the guy could do what needed to be done to try to neutralize Aaron Donald. And that was the only way he had a chance against the Rams. Because if you don't double this guy, he will destroy your game. He will wreck and wreak havoc on your offense. So, yeah, and that always drove Aaron Donald crazy. He thought it wasn't fair, but that when you're that good, you're going to draw that kind of attention, and that's why Kelce did what he did.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the good teams try to make him a non-factor. And the Eagles, you know, I'm not shocked to hear him say that because, I don't remember hearing Aaron Donald's name a whole lot when he played the Eagles. The Eagles had the worst things for Aaron Donald. An athletic center like he's talking about, and then gigantic guards, right? Where, okay, Aaron's not the biggest in the world, so wait, I got Kelce on me, and now another guard that's gigantic helping out. It certainly gave him some issues through the years, and, you know, that's what makes the Eagles awesome, like we talk about. That damn O-line they got special.
Did you notice in Aaron Donald's delivery a level of looseness and relaxation that maybe wasn't there before? Not that he was all stiff and wooden, but just something came through where, you know, once you can just unplug from this life that consists of getting the shit beat out of you all the time, you're just kind of like, yeah, you know, I've made my money. I can enjoy my life now. I don't have to be careful about anything I say ever. I can go say what I want to say. I can do what I want to do. There's just a very, I think, loose and positive vibe flowing from him. Not to say that it was negative in the past. I just noticed a higher quality of him just kind of letting it all hang out.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. You're guarded as a player. You don't want to say anything that's going to make your coach mad or your team mad. Or, you know, as a player, you definitely try to worry about being a little more respectful to other players. Oh, tell me who's the best defensive player, right? The other day he said TJ Watt. I don't know if he says that, if he's still playing, right? But now he's out of the game. He says that. TJ Watt's the guy to take the mantle. I'm still mad, Mike, that I saw him on the damn beach in Turks and Caicos, and I feel like he was trying to tell me that he was telling me I'm guaranteeing I'm never leaving the Rams, and I feel like he was trying to tell me that it was over, and I wasn't listening, and I didn't ask the damn follow-up question like a good reporter, and I'm still pissed at that. I could have broke the story. I could have done it.
I'm still trying to envision the exchange where he's saying to you, I'm full, And you're like, oh, they got a buffet at the hotel? No, I'm full. Oh, should you be swimming? Aren't you supposed to wait? No, I'm full. You're a fool? No, right. I'm full.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll see you later. So, but that is the best. I mean, I swear, I have to incorporate that into anything that I don't want to do. I'm full. That sounds so much more aspirational and positive than I just don't want to do that thing.
Yes,
I'm full.
Does. I'm full.
I'm full. I don't need to do that thing. I have done it enough. All right, let's take a break. When we return, inspired by Connecticut winning its second straight national championship, coached by Dan Hurley, who has upstaged his brother Bobby Hurley, we're going to do a draft of NFL figures who upstaged their big brothers. That's next here on PFT Live.
I just think we're in year two of a rebuild, man. Like this, UConn. This isn't the way UConn's looked. We're on our way back. We got exciting young players. We got an older group of guys that are gonna get enough wins this year that they'll feel good about the way their career end. We got some exciting young players that are gonna help lead us back. We're going to continue to recruit and develop and bring in the type of players that will bring UConn back. People better get us now. That's all. You better get us now. Because it's coming.
You better get us now. You better. You better. You hear that? You better get us now.
That was January of 2020, and here we are 4 years later, back-to-back championships. And he was making those comments after they had missed three straight NCAA tournament appearances. Now they have won two in a row, and it wasn't even close this year. They had the biggest
margin
of victory,
right,
like ever, I think,
yeah,
for the NCAA.
I think
full
so.
Full season? Was it the full season or the tournament?
I think it was just the tournament, I believe. Right,
yeah,
right.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Not a close game.
Yeah.
Not a close game. No. Okay, so Dan Hurley has kind of trumped Bobby Hurley, who was far better known as a player, specifically at Duke, when they had their runs of greatness back, in the early 90s. Dan Hurley taken over as the pride and joy of the family, inspiring today's draft. The NFL's best little brothers, a.k.a. the little brothers who made the big brothers either look bad or maybe not as great in comparison. So we could do a trivia question today, but, since you spelled kerfuffle properly, I'll give you the first
one. Oh, thank you, friend. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm on a roll today with my words and my spelling. I don't know why I'm so clear-headed today, but I am. Well, I'm going to go with, I think two of the coolest brothers out there, and I just think it's a cool story, and there's such great respect and love. I'm going with Travis Kelce right off the bat. Hey, big brother is really good. Big brother's going to Cincinnati. Big brother's in the NFL, right? I'm going to kind of upstage him with everything I do, right? Without really kind of upstaging him and still being his best buddy and showing up at his games or events and vice versa and whatever. But, Kelce beating his brother in a Super Bowl. Travis, of course, winning. He's won three. He's arguably the greatest tight end of all time. He's certainly top five. We know that. And he's dating the most popular girl in the world, right? So I got to give him a little credit for that. I'll take Travis Kelce to start.
And yeah, that one. And now, look, they're both going to probably end up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Jason and Travis.
Yeah, they got
so
a chance for it's sure.
It's not like Jason hasn't done anything.
No.
So it is kind of weird. It's upstage, but hey, beat him in the Super Bowl. That's the key. So I'm going to flip it around. Even though my first pick lost to his older brother in the Super Bowl, Jim Harbaugh has still done a pretty damn good job as guy who, well, first of all, he got to the NFL and played in the NFL as a first round pick, which Big Brother didn't do. And I was joking earlier, any guy who's played in the NFL who has an older brother has necessarily upstaged his older brother.
Very true.
So Jim Harbaugh has already won that in a landslide, which I'm sure drives John crazy. And then on top of it, Jim Harbaugh has become every bit as good of a coach as John, even though John beat him in Super Bowl 47. Jim is the guy who turned the 49ers around immediately and will turn the Chargers around, and they will play this year, Ravens at the Chargers, and maybe they'll cross paths in the playoffs as well. We will see them playing each other more often now that they're in the same conference than when they were in different conferences, and that's a win for all of us.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, again, the intensity of those matchups and how personal it is great. And, yeah, I mean, don't tell John you picked Jim as upstaging his older brother. Don't tell him that. I mean, I'm going to tell John next time we see him and try to start something.
I'm sure I'll hear from him today.
Good. I hope he does. I hope he gives you crap. But, yeah, I get that one, and that's going to be a great little rivalry as we go forward here in the NFL, in the AFC. All right. Next one, I'm going to the Watt family. I mean, really, they probably deserve to be the first pick. I mean, TJ. I mean, again, we're like, J.J. Watt is upper room of the Hall of Fame, the Deion Sanders gold, like real gold, 24-karat gold jacket room. Like, special, was definitely the best defensive player in football for a 3 or 4 year period in the NFL, maybe a little longer than that. And even when he wasn't the best player, I was like, okay, well, I think he's second best for like another 3 or 4 years after that, right? I mean, that's where it is. Like, oh, okay, maybe Aaron Donald's slightly better than him at this point in his career. But, I mean, TJ Watt, all-time great. I mean, J.J. Watt, all-time great, and T.J.'s got a chance to surpass him. I mean, right? I mean, we're talking about J.J. had the 20-and-a-half sack year twice. He's got 114 career sacks, and we're talking about T.J., who's got 96 career sacks with a lot of time left and has had a 22-and-a-half all-time record, had 19 last year. Every year he's up there high in the teams. I got to give T.J. big-time props.
And I think TJ being on the edge is in a better position to affect
for sacks,
the game, get
right.
those sacks, keep racking up the numbers. But, yeah, I mean, look, they both have been spectacular, and they both will be hanging out in the upper room of the Deion Sanders Hall of Fame when it's all said and done. Next one for me, I'm going Eli and Peyton Manning because poor Cuppa. Cuppa, remember, it's not Cooper, it's Cuppa. He's the big brother, and he had to watch his two younger brothers each win a pair of Super Bowl rings. Now, he didn't play football for very long because he had a neck condition. He wasn't even a quarterback, though. He was
a receiver.
We were watching video not long ago of young Peyton Manning in high school with his brother on the team. The brother was wearing 18. Peyton was wearing 14. And Peyton was a freshman, I think, freshman or a sophomore. And Cuppa was the receiver. And again, his career was short-circuited by the neck injury, but he got leapfrogged in a huge way by both Peyton and Eli. And obviously Eli, as the little brother to Peyton, ended up with as many Super Bowl wins as Peyton. Peyton needed that last one in his final season, his last game ever. He was determined to get to number two. So Eli, the guy he used to hold on the ground and thump on the chest and make him rattle off the names of every team in the SEC. And, you know, Eli tells that story, every team in the AFC East and every team in the NFC South, and name off brands of cigarettes. He said, I don't smoke. So Eli almost ended up with two over Peyton's
one. Yeah, listen, it's you're right. I mean, it's, you know, poor Cooper or Cuppa, as you say. Those are two special younger brothers. I mean, damn. Hey, yeah, my two younger brothers, they've only been to a combined total of 6 Super Bowls. No big deal. One of them just owns Tom Brady, right? The other one was his arch rival. No big deal. And the other one's like, oh, he's, you know, Peyton's only arguably the greatest quarterback to ever live. No big deal. I mean, one of the things that I think Peyton really, to go to the Super Bowl with 4 different head coaches is one of the greatest accomplishments in the history of football that I think kind of gets overlooked. We know how awesome and inevitable every game was when Peyton Manning was in his prime that, oh, man, it's Peyton. They're either going to win or he's going to bring them back, and it's going to be close to them winning at the end. I mean, it's incredible what both of them did.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Peyton Manning went to the 4 Super Bowls with one head coach.
What are you talking?
He only had one head coach, Peyton Manning. He was the head coach of all those teams.
There you go. Right. There you go. I mean, that says something, too. No doubt about it. All right. Last one. We got some good ones on the board here. But I'm going to do this one. I'm going to go with Shannon Sharpe. Shannon Sharpe, like a Travis Kelce, one of the greatest tight ends of all time. I mean, of course, he's a huge TV personality now. So that's where he's one up his brother once again. But also, too, like, you know, you could piggyback off this. I don't think people that are younger than us or the young generation realizes how awesome Sterling Sharp was, who got his career cut short because of a neck injury.
Condition.
Right,
yep.
Right. I mean, Sterling Sharp was him, right? He was like the first guy who was like, whoa, wait, he's kind of like strong like a running back, but he plays receiver and he's fast like the fastest receiver in football. I mean, he was arguably the best receiver in football, not named Jerry Rice. And he was at a time there we were going, oh, I don't know. He might be every bit as good, might be about to surpass him. Shannon, though, unbelievable career, what he did with the Ravens, the Broncos, amazing. I'll give him my third pick.
Sterling, one of the original members of the cast of Football Night in America. From back in 2006.
Damn, I forgot about that.
Did you know that?
No, I mean, I do now. I mean, I knew it, but I had forgot that he was on the show. I totally forgot.
You had bigger issues in the month of September of 2006.
Yeah, right? a little bit.
I won't fault you.
Just losing some blood and, you know, some major organs. No big deal, though. NBD, no big deal. Just suck it up.
I want to go Matt Sims because he emerged from his football career with a spleen. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. I'll go Nick Bosa just because, I mean, he has been every bit as good, if not better, than Joey. And Joey misses a lot of time due to injury, and that's not his fault. It just happens. But I think Nick has become – I mean, if we're talking about the younger brother eclipsing the older brother, this is a classic case where the younger brother is regarded widely as better than
his
older brother.
Yeah. Nick's special. Nick's in that combo of the guys we said earlier, right? I should have brought him up. I messed up there. T.J. Watt, Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, Nick Bosa, definitely a part of
there
that. Yeah.
We were ahead of time, and now we're out of time. We got to take a break. More PFT Live right after this. Tua Tagovailoa, speaking recently at a football camp in Hawaii, said contract talks have been good. He's leaving it to his agent. Well, if they've been going really good, he'd have a contract by now. I really think the Dolphins are wrestling with this. I don't know. But how do you put a value on a guy who isn't top three, but who led the league in passing last year, is wildly popular? Chris, this is a tough one for the Dolphins. This is a tough one. How do you protect yourself against injury? Even though he played all of last year, that's no guarantee he's going to be good to go for the rest of his career, that he's going to stay healthy. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. It is a tough one. What's the sweet spot? You know, we all know everybody wants their guy at quarterback, frame the team around him. We got a leader. We can believe in him, all that, right? You know, but yeah, you're saying it right. How much is him? How much is the all-star team and the coach around him, right? Is it, what's the injury history? It is real, right? We just saw a game in Kansas City where everybody talked about, wait, can he play in the cold and elements? And it didn't look very good in the playoffs. So those are your worry about. What's that sweet spot? I'm with you, Mike.
How many other guys out there can do what he's doing in the Mike McDaniel offense? People get mad about that, but that is a real issue for the Dolphins. We'll see if they can work it out. That's it for today. Enjoy Tuesday.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.